Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
United are back on top. We're all learning new rules and pool parties at the cottage. Come on, welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Thursday, the 21st of January. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Welcome along, everybody. Hello, hello. What a lovely day. More football to talk about from last night, more football to look forward to. The never-ending Premier League continues to roll on. Two games from last night. So United winning again after going behind and going back to the top of the table. Manchester City winning as well. So they're up there as well. But the big story really is the fact that all of the journalists last night were talking at Craven Cottage about these new images that have emerged of how the new stand at Craven Cottage is going to look when it's finally all done. And there's going to be a rooftop swimming pool. I mean, this has got to be beating Tottenham Stadium now, hasn't it? We thought that Tottenham had the best stadium in the country, but having a rooftop swimming pool, Luke, what the hell?
Yeah, and so what time are we going?
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking that, I don't know if I said this on the show, but I've certainly said this to one or two of you guys, perhaps off air, that there's a little spot at Craven Cottage that if you're fortunate enough, and I've only ever been there once, and I was invited along by someone else who had like a box there. Normally, Fulham's a great place to go and watch football anyway, as I've talked about loads of times before, and so have many other people. But there's a little spot in the top. There's a column of executive boxes, like private boxes, alongside the river on the side of one of the stands.
Yeah.
And if you get into the top one, it is literally the best place, I think, to watch a football match in the whole of the country, because you can see all the way down the Thames on a nice day, over the river, boats going past, just watching the world go by. And then when you feel like you fancy it, you can just watch a bit of the football. So given that you're watching it at Fulham, it occasionally, I mean, not very often to be fair these days, but it occasionally could have been a little bit dull. It's not dull now, but you've got the great choice of river on one side, football on the other side, sun on your back. Lovely.
So Fulham have actually bought an area of the Thames, which I had no idea was an option to people. But they have. They've bought a little bit of the Thames by the stadium so that they can build a boardwalk on it. And it's, and they're just getting nicer and nicer, aren't they? Like, and as you sort of touched upon, Luke, there is a danger that there just won't be any need to watch the football. It's like,
yeah,
are they just making the stand into like a really plush Airbnb?
Yeah,
like, there's so much stuff going into the stand, but I've not seen anything that is actually sort of like seats where you can look at the game.
Or anything football related, to be fair.
Yeah. It won't be. It's not open on match days. It's only open during the week. Honestly, it's already, I imagine people from outside London are probably fed up of hearing me say this, but it is already one of the great football days out. I mean, if you get the tube back in the good old days when we could actually go out and do stuff, you got the you get the tube to Hammersmith, walk down Fulham Palace Road, cut down one of the side streets so you get to the river. Loads of nice pubs along the way. Mm. A beautiful pub on the way down there called the Crabtree. Highly recommended.
I've been there.
Yeah, massive garden. Nice place, right?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And then you go to the game. It's honestly that's going to be their USP. And why not? By the way, you know, football's moving in that direction. And people who complain about the fact that football isn't what it used to be, true, it isn't. But it's also a very welcoming place for families and for kids and stuff now, which is a good thing. Why not market yourself as, don't worry about the football. It's just a great place. It's like a theme park. It's a great place to spend the day out.
Well, genuinely, the point is that people will come there other than on match days, so they keep the revenue coming in. And, you know, there's a degree of that happening in a lot of places. And it does make sense. Clubs have got to be clever to keep the money coming in, especially a club like Fulham, who can't, you know, always guarantee that they're going to be in the Premier League. So I think it's smart. And I would also second that going to Fulham is a lovely day out. It reminded me weirdly a bit of Naples, where you get all of those, like, those kind of...
Hang on.
Like almost stenciled style
of
images of Maradona.
Are you comparing the two?
But yeah, absolutely. Purely because in the same way that you see Maradona everywhere in Naples, you see Marcus everywhere in Fulham. and it's just nice to get an understanding of how the high regard he's held in his local area.
Yeah. Now, that's where the comparisons between Marcus and Diego Maradona end for many reasons. Anyway, it was an all right game last night. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I wonder how long it'll be, by the way. Just last thing on this swimming pool, until Wayne Lineker rocks up.
Oh, here we go. Jules is never not thinking about Wayne Lineker, but perhaps not for the reasons you think.
You say pool party to me, and I think Wayne Lineker. I'm sorry that the two of them go hand in hand, and I just can't get it out of my head. He'll be there. First time it opens, hospitality box, pool party, 12 girls ready to push each of them into the pool.
Oh God. Marcus dressed as one of them.
Yeah,
Marcus
in a bikini. For it. Well up for it. But yeah, as you say though, Luke, onto the actual football itself, it was a really good match. I think Fulham in the last few games have been excellent. And seriously, the way they're playing at the moment, I think of any of the teams in and around that bottom three at the moment, you'd probably sort of call it the bottom six right now that are at threat of getting relegated. You'd probably say that watching Fulham play, they look the most likely to probably get themselves out of this.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with that to an extent. I think I've watched them play. I saw the Chelsea game, which they were kind of unlucky. Obviously got a player sent off and Chelsea nicked it. They were, you know, they picked up a point against Spurs and last night they were okay. And the problem is there's a fine line between that and becoming completely demoralised when you're playing all right, yet you only picked up however many points it is in your last however many league games. I mean, they haven't won a league game since the end of November. So, I mean, I understand they got that FA Cup win at QPR. But so what we are seeing is a team who are playing quite well. And their next three games are absolutely crucial because they've got Burnley at home, Brighton away, which is a big game. Jules, I'm sure you'll have an opinion on. And then they've got West Brom. Like, they can't carry on, quote unquote, playing well and not pick up any wins from those next three, because they'll be in big trouble if that's the case. And for me, one of the key, to crystallise that even further, one of the key things about them this season so far is that Scott Parker deserves a good amount of credit for changing around how they play and you know, making them look like they've got a fighting chance at least of getting up there and getting out of trouble. But the reality is they've won two games this season, right? And they've scored 15 goals. Now, only Burnley and Sheffield United have scored fewer goals than them. And if they want to stay in this Premier League, they need to find someone who's going to score goals for them. And it's weird because it's a mirror image of what we're seeing at Manchester United, actually. Because for me, Manchester United, who've got the worst defence in the top half, it's effectively in their hands to win the Premier League this season. Because I know Man City have got a game in hand, and if they win that, they go above them. But Man United still have to play Man City. So technically, it's still in Man United's hands. So Man United need to sort the defence out if they're going to go close to the title. And Fulham need to sort their attack out if they're going to stay in the Premier League. And I'll end by saying there was an absolutely bizarre situation in the game last night when Fulham go a goal ahead and the assistant referee looked like he'd seen a ghost. He was absolutely terrified. Did you see the footage of him? His face was extraordinary. I don't know, it was like he'd never seen a goal before. It was absolutely insane.
Well, we're through the looking glass now if Fulham are going one ahead.
He's like, I think I've learnt what to do here, but I'm not really sure. He looked terrified.
They didn't prepare us for this in the training. I think it's Fulham were okay, weren't they? I think they've perhaps been quite, it's been a little bit overblown, like as you allude to, Luke, in that they're just not, they're getting draws and that's been sort of treated a little bit as them getting wins. But I thought it was 100% interesting the way that United approached the game. They were clearly comfortable in just being a bit more possession-based than we've seen from them in recent months, where they've kind of been kind of all in on the counter-attack. And they looked comfortable in a way that they didn't for a long time. Do you know what I mean? It felt like even when they went 1-0 down, they knew they were going to win. Fulham knew they were going to win. We knew they were going to win. And Man United haven't felt like that in a while. And that's a really interesting thing to see. And I think, is there an argument that Paul Pogba is currently having his best spell as a Man United player? He's really, really stepped it up. He obviously got the winner against Burnley. He was unlucky not to get the winner against Liverpool. I know it doesn't count if you don't do it, but still he's been involved. He's been affecting games. And obviously his goal yesterday was absolutely superb on his weaker foot as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think that the thing is, at the moment, I think that United almost, when you watch them, you almost feel like they play better when they are a goal down, because they feel like they then have to sort of come out on top after that, and they have to push and they have to get the equaliser and then the winner. And so whenever they go a goal behind at the moment, you always just think, well, they're going to probably win this anyway, and especially when the goal was so early on from Fulham. But My praise in terms of what I was saying about Fulham and how much they've improved lately is the fact that they've been able to adapt. I think everyone probably put Fulham in their bottom three at the start of the season. And when you look at the way their performances have improved and the fact that defensively they've got so much better, I get what you're saying in terms of the amount of wins they've had, Luke, and that is something that they'll want to correct. But they've picked up draws against some really decent teams, Tottenham most recently, Liverpool a few games before that. And so drawing is obviously better than losing, and they've still got a game in hand on the two teams below them in West Brom and Sheffield United. So I think they're doing all right. And I think the fact that Scott Parker has been able to adjust the way the team have played and become a lot more solid defensively, go into that three at the back and changing up the way they've played, I think is commendable to how they've done that. And who knows, we'll see what happens. Of course, as you say, Luke, the next two games for them are absolutely massive, as the Brighton Fulham game is for Brighton as well, because they've been another team like Fulham who have played very well in games and not got anything out of it, or played well and only picked up draws. So I completely hear you on that one. But yeah, on Man United, I think Paul Pogba just seems like now he knows he's got this starting place in the team, whereas before he was sort of in and out. he just seems so much happier, doesn't he? In his post-match interview, he's smiling. He just seems so much more at ease with everything that's happening at United, doesn't he, Luke?
Yeah, and yeah, this is a player who's got everything, right? He can do everything. So he can go both ways. He's got two good feet. I mean, he alluded to the fact last night in the post-match interview that his left foot is his weaker foot. I mean, there are plenty of players at Premier League level who can't strike the ball that well with their good foot. You know, he's rangy when he moves. He glides across the ground. He's quick. He's strong. He's technically fantastic. His passing is amazing. I mean, he's essentially the complete midfield player. And if he turns up to the party in a season like this, this can be the difference for a team like Man United, who are peppered with other really good, important players. I mean, can't write off Cavani as well. I know he's getting older, but he's in such good shape. His goal-scoring record, in admittedly a league where there aren't a huge amount of strong teams. You could argue the same about the Premier League, I suppose, but admittedly, he's playing for a much better team. But his goal-scoring record is unreal. So if you pepper this team, if De Gea can find some form again, and we know he's capable, and you've got Pogba, and you've got Fernandes, and you've got Cavani, and you've got pace with players like Greenwood, Rashford, and Martial, and Luke Shaw was outstanding against Liverpool, so he's got it in his locker. If all the stars align in a season like this, they've got a real chance. Now, this sounds hypocritical by me. I know that because I was slating Solskjaer a few months ago, as indeed we all were. But it's one of those seasons where all bets are really off now. And what we're seeing with United is we're effectively seeing a tribute act to the Alex Ferguson years, right? And there's no way when you go and watch a tribute act at the pub on a Friday night, say it's an AC/DC tribute act, right? No, do you know what? Say it's a Rolling Stones tribute act. That's a better analogy. So you go and see a Rolling Stones tribute act. Right, you can never make the argument, right, that they're going to be better, quote unquote, better than the original Rolling Stones. But I tell you what, in 2021, you probably have a better time watching the tribute act than you would the actual band. So it might not matter. And the only thing that's in their way is a massive Man City shaped kind of enemy looming on the horizon. Who I think, we might be on the cusp of seeing a team start to walk it now because they're playing so well, and they might stamp their authority on the league this season.
Are you ruling Liverpool out?
Beatles-esque.
I don't think Liverpool have been consistent enough, and I think Man City, who are, I think, favourites for the title now. For me, Man City could walk away with it here from now, but if they don't, who knows?
Let's move on and talk about Man City, seeing as though Luke thinks that they are now the absolute favourites for the title. And I'm sure most people would agree with that. They beat Aston Villa last night by 2-0. This was such a good game. Really enjoyable from the minute the whistle went until the final whistle. It was just a really good end-to-end match. Loads of chances from both sides. And in the end, I sort of felt it was a little bit harsh on Aston Villa, even though Man City probably did deserve the win in the end. It did feel a bit harsh. I mean, who knew these bloody rules? I mean, I did not understand that rule. And forgive me if I sound really stupid here, but I thought that if that player's offside and then he gets involved in the play, he's offside, surely. I don't know, but I'm sort of with Dean Smith and Tyrone Mings and Konza, who all spoke about it after the game, that they felt that Man City's first goal was a little bit confusing. What did you think, Luke, of the whole thing?
Yeah, and so for the further avoidance of doubt, hopefully, not just among us, but among our listeners as well. And I do lament the fact that we have to do this, because football should be, at its heart, a simple game and the game that we all kind of fell in love with for those reasons. I think I'm right in saying that as soon as Tyrone Mings chests the ball down, the Man City player who was previously offside is then entitled to be active again. So it is to me, it's a kind of understandable law, but it is quite a counterintuitive one. And I can totally understand why people feel sort of hard done by it. But I mean, if you're going to level the blame at any person, I suppose, given that we're led to believe that players are told the laws at the start of every season, I think referees' representatives go around and kind of talk to them about the changes in the laws and everything. I think if that's the case, and that still happens, which I presume it does, then I guess the person you've got to blame for it is Tyrone Mings. I mean, he's an international football player. He's experienced and pretty solid normally. So maybe he was a little bit kind of caught unawares. And, if you're being generous, maybe that's understandable because the laws have become so Byzantine now that no one really knows what's happening. I would not like to be a direct report of Dean Smith this morning. I don't think I'd like to be kind of reporting straight into him, because he was absolutely furious. And he is a terrifying man, Dean Smith.
I love him.
Yeah.
He
looks like he's not a man to be trifled with.
No,
oh, absolutely
he looked absolutely furious when the referee was sending him off, didn't he? First he got the yellow card and then you could see him mouthing off still. And
straight away.
Sorry, what?
I said straight away he got the red straight away, didn't he? So I'd love to know what he said.
Yeah, exactly. I would have loved to know exactly what came out of his mouth then. But he's just the epitome of every football fan, I think. When you see him watching Aston Villa, watching his team play, he is what every fan is thinking. And so, I completely understood why he got so frustrated by that. Because, of course, you've explained it, Luke, and we all understand the rule now it's been explained. But it just seems a little bit strange, Jim, because, I mean, the Man City player effectively snuck up on Tyrone Mings, and of course he knows that once he's playing that ball he's then in play, but I don't know, it just feels a little bit wrong, doesn't it?
I think especially because the circumstances of how that the ball came back into play with Mings playing it happens in a split second, doesn't it? So I guess it's just about the speed of calculation in which you're making these decisions. And also, I mean, Villa have only had 3 days training, maybe they've just forgotten how to play the game altogether. But it is a shame that it was such a sort of a weird way for them to concede, because they were defending like they were down to 10 men in a cup final in the last minute for most of that game. And I mean that as a compliment, because whenever City got into their box, they were so dogged. They were so, so good. And I think, obviously, they're doing really, really well, aren't they? And the fact that Dean Smith and Jack Grealish both support Villa is perhaps one in the eye for people that think fans don't know what they're talking about when it comes to decisions their own team should make. But I just feel like they've got 3 or 4 games in hand, effectively, haven't they? Because they've been affected by COVID. So I think they're kind of they're in a strange position in that I think is a league position?
Where are you going,
maybe,
Jim, with this?
Is it sort of are they basically sort of going under the radar a little bit? Because if they win those games in hand, they'll be right up there. And we're talking about other teams perhaps having really, really good seasons, pushing for a European place, perhaps even a Champions League place. Could Villa do that?
They'd be fourth if they won those games in hand, Luke.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I you know what? It's difficult to say. And as I said earlier on the old point when it comes to Man United, who knows? Who and no one knows this season. People who are paid to give insightful stuff about football are as clueless as the rest of us, I believe, because everything's so different. But, speaking of defending or kind of working really hard like it's a cup final, I forgot to mention actually in the earlier game that we covered that Areola, who was at fault for one of the goals, was up there trying to put it right. He was in the penalty area for a last-minute kind of set piece for Fulham. So maybe everyone feels like, every game does feel a bit like a cup final and they want to try and get what they can out of it. According to Dean Smith, though, to go back to Aston Villa, he said to the fourth official, "Did you get juggling balls for Christmas?"
Yeah.
Your business, well, actually, Dean. What are you playing? Yeah.
You love it as well because he's booked him and he's then gone back and booked him straight away. You can tell after he's booked him, he's basically gone like, "You heard," something like that. Yeah, yeah, that's just what I thought. Like,
it's
brilliant. I love it. It's so childish.
He followed that quote up with, "I don't think any other manager would get sent off for that." Is that?
Well,
I think they probably would. They probably would.
Yeah. He's like an uncle doing the doors at like a 21st birthday party, isn't he?
100%.
He's not a proper bouncer, but he will be a temporary one.
100%. And I think Dean's probably got it in his locker to be able to be one. He just don't fancy it, I can remember once at school, there was a school band thing, and the school band in question got all their dads to come and be, quote, security at their concert. And they all like wore suits and bow ties and stuff. And they all kind of had a go at being bouncers for a day. So I reckon Dean probably would do that for one of his kids' school concerts or something.
You can see it happening, can't you? Look, Douglas Luiz, again, was impressive for Aston Villa last night. He's been one of the players that I think has caught a lot of people's eyes. And it reminded us of this situation when he was playing for Man City ahead of the 2018-19 season. Apparently, Pep Guardiola sent video footage to the Home Office with an explanation of why he would be important to Man City's midfield because he had work permit issues at the time. I mean, this
what are you going to say? He sent video footage of him going to get the dole or something to get him kicked out.
No. This is so Pep Guardiola that he's gone to that extreme length to send video footage of him to the Home Office. Sensational.
Nightmare. I think also the video would have almost certainly been about fucking 3 hours long as well.
Yeah, really detailed, like properly, just all about the exact sort of tactical.
It would have been like a Terrence Malick film, Jim, wouldn't it? It would have been like properly like art house, like really, really long kind of shots, weird camera angles. Like it would have been earnest. Properly art house.
Probably black and white. I love him. Mad nerd.
Yeah, I do think, by the way, being mad like Pep is may kind of, as I said earlier, or at least alluded to earlier, may kind of reap rewards this season. I mean, they have been in absolutely imperious form. And when you say, what about Liverpool? Well, haven't Liverpool failed to win their last four Premier League games? I mean, Man City have only lost one game since the end of September. And that was when they were beaten quite handily, I suppose, by Spurs. But their games coming up are quite interesting as well because when I talk about them stamping their authority on the Premier League this season, well, West Brom away, Sheffield United at home, Burnley away, that's their next three. It gets a bit trickier for them after that. But, I mean, you wouldn't put it past them. I just think the intensity that Pep injects in these teams and the way he carries himself probably quite lends itself to the strange times we're living in. Jules, I don't know what you feel about it, but, I mean, you watch football even more closely than I do. So you'll probably understand what I mean when I say that maybe he's the man for the season because of the way that everything's going at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that Pep Guardiola is such an intense character, isn't he? He sort of, he will be probably relishing the fact that the season is almost like this, that it has to be so intense, that there are so many games. And the fact that City kind of went a little bit, under the radar is the wrong expression to use because City are never really under the radar because of the size of the club and how good they are. But because they had that sort of stuttering start to the season and now they've sort of clicked into gear and they've found their form and they just seem like the City of old that no one can seem to beat right now, even when they're maybe not on their best day. The fact that they haven't got Sergio Aguero and haven't had him pretty much for the whole season, even when Jesus is fit, he doesn't start him necessarily and decides to play with a false nine. I think KDB played in that position for a bit of last night until he got withdrawn from the match early, which he was furious about as well. He
and so are you, because you captained him?
And no, I did captain him, Luke. And you know what? I'm not joking. I've been furiously like clicking on the Team Ramble Fantasy Premier League mini league, looking at how many points it's going to take me to catch you. And I noticed you didn't have any Man City players in your FPL team this week. So I thought, this is my chance. I have made up some ground, but I think I missed the boat with not having John Stones in the team, who was like...
You fear my methods because you don't understand my methods, Jules.
No, Luke, honestly, I'm catching you. Have you refreshed it this morning? Have you refreshed it?
This is the most... Do you know what? I love this because this is the most intense rivalry on anything I've ever had before. I could never really get Jim or Pete to get involved in the intensity of the rivalry, and Marcus wouldn't do it either. So I'm pleased I've found the nemesis. It's really important to me. It gives me fuel.
You know what? I said to my other half last night, because we both had quite a few City players in our teams, and he's doing way better than me, but he's got his mini league, who he's desperate to catch one of his mates in. And I said to him, and he's quite competitive with me, but because he's so far ahead of me this year, I'm sort of over it. I'm a bit like, oh, whatever, you've won. And I said to him, whatever happens, all I need to do this season is beat Luke. And I said, I was getting so annoyed about it. And I was like, I had Cancelo, and you know, he hit the bar at one point, and I was like, fuck's sake, fucking score.
also, I don't want to put this to the social media because I know you'll be massively more popular than me among our listeners. But if you are Team Moore, hashtag Team Moore in the Fantasy Premier League, then do by all means let yourself know. We need to build an army to defeat Jules because she thinks he's the best at Fantasy Premier League, and I've got news for her. Anyway.
No. I do not think I'm the best. I just want to beat the person who definitely thinks he's the best, and that is Luke Moore. So
Jim
hashtag
Campbell.
Team Breach. Thank you very much. So yeah, we'll see what happens with the actual Premier League title this year. But it looks as though Man City, they're right up there, aren't they? Man United, again, after their win last night, top of the table. They were 15th in November. Just like take that in for a minute. Man United were 15th in November and now they're top of the table. So it is one of those seasons. Liverpool obviously playing tonight and we'll talk a bit more about that after the break. But just to quickly let you know about some more lovely new content for you. A new episode of On the Continent is out on the Football Ramble Presents right now. So make sure you check that out. Dotton, Andy and Miguel Delaney this week are talking about Mesut Ozil at Fenerbahce. That move has now gone through. And also they'll talk about the Serie A title race as well. And the incredible story of Roma making too many substitutes in the Coppa Italia. An amazing story. It's absolutely mad. So make sure you head over to Football Ramble Presents to listen and subscribe now. We'll take a break after this. Loads more Ramble fun.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
This week at Sukarnov.
Me and Luke have been whiling away the lockdown with our usual nonsense on the Luke and Pete Show. Here's a quick taste of the kind of challenges we've been setting for ourselves.
Give us any nation and I'll tell you why they're dirty.
All right, I'll do it now.
Italy. Yeah. It looks like a sexy boot.
There's also a brand new episode of On the Continent, your weekly guide to the sublime and frequently ridiculous in European football. Find it over on Football Ramble Presents every Thursday.
Neymar's responded to this in kind, that they forgot to tell you how to win titles. Then Alvaro has responded with a picture of Pelé with three World Cups going in the eternal shadow of the king.
This reminds me of Stormzy and Wiley, the spice that they have.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
Hi, I'm Linvoy Primus and you're listening to the Football Ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble. Loads more on the way for you. Now it's time for this.
Just email the show at footballramble.com. Right now, so Peter, Vishen, Kane, or Jules, or Jim, or Andy, Luke, all my kids can read it out. Well done.
Yes, indeed. It is time for emails. Great to hear Linvoy Primus in the back of the ad. The back of the ad break there as well. Just need to point that out. I mean, this is probably the only football podcast in the world that is still big ups to to Linvoy Primer. So fantastic to hear that. We've got an email here from Gavin Cook, and I'm not entirely sure why it's been given to me to read, but perhaps everyone listening can fill in the blanks themselves. Gavin says, although not Chinese, I think this team deserves a mention, obviously referring to the extraordinarily named Chinese team we talked about earlier in the week. They are from Norway, and they are called FL Fart. They play in the fourth tier of Norwegian football, and their ground is called the Fart Banner.
Oh, wow.
That's great. Is that, is that like the equivalent of like the fart dome or something?
Must be.
Or like the flatulence bowl.
We have got a reasonable amount of Norwegian listeners. In fact, we did a live show in Norway once in Oslo. So maybe a Norwegian listener or two can get in touch and tell us what that translates to. Might just be, I mean, fart might just be the place. And then banner, as you say, Jim, might just be stadium or dome or arena or something.
Something like that. I have to say, obviously, you know, over the years, we've had a lot of people send in sort of brilliant names of football teams from different places. And I don't know if this has ever been mentioned on the show before, but I recently found one that I don't think is ever going to get lodged from being my number one. And it's a team from Swaziland who were called 11 Men in Flight.
No.
And that is fantastic.
Just magnificent, isn't it? So if anyone
can
beat that, I'd love to hear it.
That probably isn't in the rules.
I haven't
checked. It would be helpful.
Actually, would it be in the... I guess it probably... Probably the rules haven't, you know, accounted for that sort of mutation in human evolution that would allow 11 men to fly.
Oh, I'm sure they probably have. It just hasn't come up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, until it actually happens in a game, like what happened last night, we won't know about the rule.
Yeah, exactly.
No flight. Sorry. So Luke Billingham has been in touch, and he says, the discussion on Tuesday's show about club call brought to mind a long lost story from my childhood. When I was 14, I had an unhealthy addiction to club call, and once returned from school to my dad holding a £250 phone bill, he proceeded to give me the rollicking of my life, telling me that porn wasn't healthy for a kid of my age. After 10 seconds of confusion, I realised that he assumed I had an addiction to a bit of blue rather than to a football hotline. Knowing that he would be even more angry if I tried to justify spending £10 trying to find out when Paolo Wanchope's transfer from Derby County to West Ham would go through, I decided that his assumed version of reality was less embarrassing and took the rollicking on the chin. Not sure
it's
where
so
I stand
funny.
On that, but I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just try to put myself in that position. First of all, I was far too terrified to use club call. I mean, I know the guys talked about it on Tuesday, but I mean, they did used to draw out the time you'd spend on the phone before they gave you information. And I suspect looking back now, the information was absolute fucking nonsense anyway. And it was something like, I mean, back then, I think it was something like 90p a minute or something. It was a proper money spinner my opinion, quite an unethical thing. So I would never have even rung club call from my home phone, let alone a porn line. So I think, at least, I don't really know what's worse to be honest. What would you have said to your old man? Who your dad was quite strict, wasn't he?
No, not strict.
Good old
quite
Ian.
The right word. He wouldn't. He wouldn't be happy
right
about
wing.
Me spending £250 on anything down a phone line. So I think I'd have been too embarrassed as a teenager to let him think it was porn. So I'd have fessed up. About it being club call. I think I used club call once though, and it was like it was really obvious from the beginning the way they're sort of like dragging everything out. It's like, oh, this is to suck money out of me. So
the idea of this whole concept now just seems so baffling. Not just because of the fact that everything's so readily available for us on the internet now, whether that is transfers or the other thing, but the fact that even just thinking about having a landline, I don't have a landline. Do you have a landline still?
No. And when I had a landline as a kid, so this is the thing: young people these days will never know what we went through. Like I can remember, so we had a phone downstairs and a phone upstairs, and they were obviously on the same line. So you could, this is obvious to people of mine and Jim's age, but perhaps to people listening, it's not. Like when you picked up the home phone to make a phone call, someone else could just pick up the other phone and listen in because it's the same line, right? So not only was it bad enough that if you wanted to go out on a date with a girl, you have to ring their home phone, generally speak to their mum or their dad and ask to speak to them. Not only that, but in my household, my parents, who are massive piss takers, you won't be surprised to know, would always be listening on the other line.
Yeah.
Oh, but they'd always just be listening in. And it was absolutely horrendous. So the very idea of a home phone line is really antiquated. We don't have one here now. But I mean, back then it was a proper stress.
Yeah. And it also, you know, you get people saying that football's all about money now. And, you know, it's any opportunity to suck money out of the fans. And club call is further proof that that was always the case.
It's always the
technology moves on. And
there was just a limit to what they thought they could get away with back then.
Exactly.
Isn't now. Yeah.
I remember when we first got cordless phones and you could have like one in the hallway and one upstairs, like on the bedside table in like mum and dad's room. And it was like the best thing ever because you no longer had to be attached to the wall to make that phone call that you're talking about, Luke. And it's just so funny even thinking that that's...
Jules, I bet you were just swanning around the house with the big aerial out the cordless phone like you're in Clueless.
100%.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff. All right. Well, keep your emails coming in to us. We love hearing from you guys. show@footballramble.com. Right. A few more things that have happened this week. Mikel Antonio, do you guys remember he had that car crash last year? And normally we wouldn't find anything.
Do I remember the greatest thing to ever happen to a football player? Yes, I do.
Normally we wouldn't find these things humorous, but this one most certainly was. Just to refresh your memories in case you have forgotten, he was dressed as a snowman, leaving his family house to go back home. And he basically skidded on some ice and went into a neighbour or a family home's wall, which basically had a little shed that kept the bins in, and he smashed his Lamborghini into it. Well, we finally heard from Mikel Antonio on that incident because he's kept it pretty hush-hush until now. But he recently revealed that basically to this day, he still really is hurt by that incident. And he followed that up by saying, "I missed that car." That's what he's hurt by. Not the shame of the incident, the fact that people were taking pictures on their phones of him dressed as a snowman. And his Lamborghini was sort of like almost sideways on this person's bins, basically. But yeah, he says he misses the car. And that's the biggest thing from it. And the fact he now has to pay like 20 grand in insurance to insure a car now. So it's, it's ruined him a little bit.
I also like the fact that he said, if I had something along the lines, if I had my time again, I'd have taken my snowman costume off in the car.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's almost a bit like, I understand it could be a serious situation and I don't want to make light of it necessarily. But I mean, let's be honest, in those situations, you probably do panic a little bit. And so he probably just forgot he was dressed as a snowman, which for me is the best thing about
it. Yeah. But I love that in his weird hypothetical situation where he can go back and change time, he doesn't not crash the car.
Yeah.
He just doesn't do it dressed as a snowman.
Anything you'd have done differently, Mikel? Probably taken the carrot off my face. That's it, really. Yeah.
There's another thing as well. Where in this interview, he talks about how there were obviously loads of people gathered around, and he was confiscating their phones.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, on what authority? Like, you're not a dinner lady. Like, I'm not giving you my phone because you crashed your car. Fuck off.
And I love that there was one sneaky person who managed to keep hold of their phone. And thank God for them, because it meant we got the pictures of him dressed as the snowman getting out of his car. And there's like a photo of his face. And as you say, there's this like really, really shit carrot on his nose. Like, it's not even a good snowman costume.
No.
Yeah.
That's the point. And you think, and this is the thing, see, if you are, I mean, we remember the heady days of Aboué Man, where he would be an amazing costumes. And if you there's a Hollywood celebrity, I forget who it is now, who it might be Heidi Klum, who does this quite famous costume party every year over in Hollywood, I believe.
I think you're right, and
some of the costumes they wear, because obviously they take it seriously and they've got loads
good,
of money,
aren't they?
Yeah, it's amazing. They're absolutely insane, to the point where sometimes you won't even know who it is. Footballers should be putting a bit more effort in. I mean, I've got the resources. They've got the help to do it. Like, and Aboué Man took it serious, probably took it too seriously, but Some of the old kind of classic footage of your mid-2000s footballers, just when proper camera phones came about, so that it was a bit of inertia. People weren't really adjusting their behaviour accordingly, and you'd see like Peter Crouch rolling around, or they'd be dressed ridiculously. That was good stuff, but I think now footballers really need to start stepping it up a level, and they could use Heidi Klum as their inspiration, I think.
Yeah, hard to argue with that.
I'm passionate about that.
aren't you? Well, there we go. We finally heard Mikel Antonio's take on that incident. Brilliant stuff. Now, it is the January transfer window. There's been a few things going on. Not a great deal yet, though. I think that we're probably still expecting to see a lot more incomings to the Premier League in the next week or so. But there have been a few contract terminations. Now, Arsenal have terminated Socrates' contract. And like Mesut Ozil, he hadn't even made the Europa League squad this season. He's one of those players, isn't he, Jim, speaking to the Arsenal fan, who, I mean, he was there for good reason in the sense that he was always that player you could turn to because he was sort of that mean person in that Arsenal team. He had a habit, didn't he, of celebrating his own tackles sometimes.
He did,
remember
yeah.
that fist pump and that roar after he tackled Willian that time?
Yeah, in fact.
Maybe that's why he wasn't in the squad, because he keeps tackling Willian.
Yeah, maybe that's it. And Willian's very susceptible to being tackled at the moment. He seems to have no answer to it. I feel sad about this. I really like Socrates. He's a proper, like, because he was a no-nonsense defender in a team full of utter nonsense defenders. So it made him stand out. And I think he's slightly unfairly tainted as being this kind of error-prone defender. And he had the odd Rick in him, but perhaps not as many as some of the kind of more chaotic defenders Arsenal have had over the years. And I think it's a bit sad that he didn't make those squads. I think Mustafi would have been the obvious candidate for that instead. But, you know, obviously he needs to move on. It's a good thing for him to go and find a new club. And, he leaves in sort of better circumstances than his squad omissions would suggest. But I just, it's another player whose his contract is actually being terminated rather than them being sold, just because Arsenal pay too much money to players that perhaps have no resale value. And it's something they really, really have to look at, because it's happening. I mean, it's happened twice, like this week.
Jim, with Socrates, I mean, you kind of alluded to the reason they signed him in the first place, is that he is quite nasty and he is a defender's defender, and maybe they needed a bit of that. And it's only 6 months. I mean, his contract's up in the summer anyway. Same with Mustafi. I think his contract's up in the summer. So, I mean, I think Mustafi's probably on quite big wages, though, isn't he, as you've also alluded to. But one of the rumours I found, which is absolutely incredible, actually, I don't know if it's true, it's just a rumour that was doing around on the internet last night and this morning, is that part of the reason they wanted to get rid of Socrates is because Thomas Partey wants his shirt number. Apparently he wore Thomas Partey's favourite shirt number.
What?
And so it's just it's a bonus. Might as well do that as well. But I do think that, I mean, as Arteta himself said, they've got quite a big squad. He does need to do an overhaul. It does sort of make sense to me. He doesn't seem, I don't want to be too stereotypical about how Arteta wants to play, because I think we're still seeing a manager who's learning his way through it. But if I was going to say, if you said to me in a straight yes or no answer, is Socrates an Arteta type player? You're going to say no. So
no, absolutely, yeah.
It kind of makes sense from that point of view. But I do hope it's something around an assurance that Thomas Partey was given that he could have the shirt number.
Yeah, that would be pretty funny. And exactly the sort of behaviour that you should not be indulging from anyone. which means it's almost certainly true.
Yeah, exactly.
I also heard a rumour that Lacazette and Aubameyang are fighting over Ozil's number.
Yeah, but they're big mates, aren't they?
They're probably just a ball pit, aren't they?
Both be 10.
Well, look, at least Socrates had a better run in the Arsenal team in his time than this bloke. Last week in the Dutch second tier, the team FC Den Bosch released a player, Jeroen Lumu, 24 hours after signing him. Wow, this is harsh. The morning after his announcement, the club said Jeroen Lumu has not lost his wild hair. At FC Den Bosch, take it or leave it, we wish Jeroen all the best with his future career. Apparently, wild hair generally just means his wildness, so not specifically referring to his hair. But this is madness. He signs for the club and 24 hours later, he's gone.
Yeah.
I wanted to do apparently that with
part of the issue was they expected him in training on Thursday, and he just wasn't there. And he explained that he wanted to start on the Monday instead. Like, to him, that made more sense, because like, I don't want to disrupt everyone's rhythm. So just coming on Monday.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
He wanted his last weekend of freedom before he played.
Yeah.
So
I've never heard of this player before. Sorry, Jim. I was going to say, I've never really heard of this player before. Although Andy Brassel probably knows who he is. So what I did is I went online and looked up some of his performances. Admittedly, you know, there's a YouTube compilation for every player set to Bring Me to Life by Evanescence, and it makes the player look really good. But I don't know what's always Evanescence.
Always.
It seems to be. Yeah, but he actually looks decent. I mean, he looks like he's got a brilliant left foot on him. So it must, and I heard that Liverpool were interested in him for a while. So he must have something about him.
He turned them down, didn't he?
Right.
Yeah, when he was 18, he had a contract on the offer. But I read an article about him, and there was a similar sort of translation issue to the wild hair thing, which perhaps sums up what's happened here by accident, which said Willem Twee's former talent has already worn out 11 clubs in his football career.
Very good.
Who knows?
That is very nice. You do have a tradition of, I know it's quite a cliche thing to say, but there is a tradition of Dutch players having a bit of trouble with these types of disciplinary things. But it's just it's quite interesting, because I kind of feel a little bit sad for him that the only reason probably that the majority of football fans in England are going to have heard of him is because of this kind of type of stuff.
Yeah.
I imagine he would have liked to have been known for the 6-year contract he was reportedly offered by Liverpool.
It probably won't be though, Luke, will it? This will be the story where everyone knows him for. Good stuff that. Just a couple of other things to touch on briefly. Last night, Ronaldo became the all-time leading top goal scorer ever for club and country. 760 goals in 1,040 games, which is quite incredible. So, of course, all of the classic Ronaldo pictures are doing the rounds on the internet. It's an amazing achievement, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, it really is. But I am actually losing track of who's the top goal scorer ever in various circumstances and et cetera,
so
and et cetera.
Records.
Because it seems like there's this now three-way tussle between Ronaldo, Messi and Pelé's involved as well, which is, again, like reality sort of mutating and eating itself. Like, I mean, it is obviously it's an incredible achievement, but, you know, we've run out of ways to say that Ronaldo's amazing. So I guess this is just the latest... In that, isn't it? But who knows how far this will go? Because I think he's going to play probably into his 40s, Ronaldo. That's my...
I was about to say that. I don't think Pele will add any more goals to his career, but then you never know. He might dig a few from the back of the sofa somewhere.
He's not going to score any, but as we know, it doesn't stop him adding them, does it?
No, exactly.
Do you know what Pele's doing right now? Pele is on YouTube going through all his games looking for the merest hint of a deflection. And off his shin pad to try and see if he can get it attributed to him.
You know,
it's all Pele does anyway. Just remember stuff. he's Abe Simpson, just sitting about remembering his goals.
He's amazing, isn't he? He's 80 years old, and there's a documentary coming out on Netflix. I think it comes out at the end of February or at the end of this month. Maybe it is. I can't remember when it is. But anyways, there's a new documentary on Pele coming out on Netflix, and it looks pretty good. It's going to be amazing. But yesterday, because of this documentary, I think Fortnite staged the Pele Cup, where players competed against each other to unlock Pele's Air Punch emote. I mean, everything I've just said there, I don't even know what it means. I don't know what Fortnite is. I Googled it because I thought, well, I better put a bit of effort in and show that I'm trying to find out what this is. I still don't understand. I don't know what an emote is. but whatever happens, I'm sure that whatever goals are scored in this Pele Cup on Fortnite, Pele will try and add to his tally, won't he?
Well, I'm pretty interested in the Pele documentary. I think it'll be good. I'll watch that for sure. I'm less interested in the Fortnite Pele Cup, but that might just be because I don't understand it.
Me too.
The guys who run The Offensive, which is another kind of podcast, a really funny kind of football-based podcast, they're always playing it, and they're always asking me to play it with them. But I don't really, and that, by the way, I should have to say, by the way, they're also in their 30s. So it's not, I'm not being asked to play it by some kind of 12-year-old kids, but I don't really know what it is. And I'm kind of embarrassed to learn it, because I think it's probably not something for a man who's in his 40s.
It's a video game, isn't it? It's a battle royale game. So basically, you and loads of other players drop onto an island, and then you fight until there's only one of you left.
The last 13 years.
Yeah. Apparently, it's really fun. But on the Pelé documentary, for me, yeah, he scored loads of goals, blah, blah, blah. He played for Santos for ages. He won the World Cup when he was 4 years old, all that stuff. We know all that stuff. To me, there's only two things I'm interested in, like, seeing covered. Why are you mates with Mick Hucknall? How has that happened? Because we know that's the case. And is he going to talk about the time that he turned his hair into diamonds?
Yeah. And also, when you think about Pelé winning the World Cup when he was 17, like back then, I mean, it is quite impressive. But then, like, there were kids with chimney sweeps back then. You know what I mean? Like, there were kids younger doing much harder things. That's the point. It's not mentioned enough, that.
No, it's true. It's not really an achievement at all.
Well, look, we're looking forward to watching that when it does eventually come out, and hopefully we will find out the story behind him and Mick Hucknall's friendship. We're looking forward to finding out about that. More football to come tonight, though. Liverpool against Burnley. Liverpool can't move in the table, so they will stay fourth even if they win tonight. But I'm sure they want to get the points on the board, of course, and you just expect against Burnley that they'll probably do that just to keep the pace with the teams above them. Kate, Andy and Luke, you're going to be back tomorrow to join those two guys for another football ramble, where I'm sure you'll be talking a lot about the Liverpool-Burnley game, plus loads more. Luke, lovely to speak to you as always. I'll see you very soon.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks for having me. See you in a bit.
Jim, great speech as always. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening to Football Ramble, and we'll see you tomorrow.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around the duck.
So, if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster, and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.